Call the roll, call the roll, call the roll, call the roll, call the roll of the Justice League of America.
Superman!
Here!
Aquaman!
Here!
Wonder Woman!
Here!
Flash!
Here!
Metamorpho!
Here!
Plastic Man!
Here!
And Batman!
Here!
Yeah! Here they come! Hey, look out, jump! It's the Justice League! The Justice League!
Superheroes all always on the ball! It's the Justice League! The Justice League! Takes big trouble with a capital B! A super colossal calamity! A tremendous, stupendous catastrophe! To bring them all out swinging! And when they're swinging, man, they're bringing!
Hey, Walt, here!
Here! Chris, here!
Shecky, here!
And we're all welcoming you to Comic Culture, the radio show that champions the local comic book shop.
Big news with capital C.
I'm pushing through.
I think you need to go back to grade school, Chris.
Well, I was thinking about comics, right? It's capital C for comics. C is for comics.
Oh, okay.
Hey, you know what? We're also on 93.3 CFMU, McMaster's award-winning radio station. We're podcasting at comicbookdaily.com and getthepointradio.com. I am Walter Duralia, and I am here.
And I am Chris Owen, professor at Hamilton's Mohawk College, and I am here.
And joining us is Shecky Feldstein, and he is...
Here.
Here.
Shecky's here. Like, why do I got to do this? Hey, listen, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys, I'm here.
Welcome to the show. We've been AWOL.
For a couple weeks.
Very
is
important
that like
things.
MIA?
Kind of.
Yeah, kinda.
And but we're excited to be back. We have a lot of news to share with you. We have a lot of insights. We have a lot of tips. Some on horse racing.
Looking for a tip?
Give me the tip.
Yeah, and so it's a great show to listen to. You might even want to record this show. This is how good this show is going to be. And like always, every week we start the show filling you with knowledge on the comics that are hitting the local New This Week stands at your local comic book shop. I guess they would be the local New This Week stands.
Local New This Week stands at the local
comic at your shop. Local comic book shop.
Do we have a sponsor for New This Week?
We do, Chris. New This Week brought to us by Remembrance Day, where the superheroes were everyday people trying to make a difference.
Oh, that's very nice.
Yeah, that was just last week.
A few days ago.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
A few days. You know what? I get lost in time.
Well, but, what's not lost in time?
Uh-oh.
Aquaman.
Aquaman number 11.
Number 11. So it goes to 11.
It goes to 11.
That's nice.
Yep. So Aquaman, it's... condition critical.
Uh-oh.
Condition critical. That's the name of the storyline here. Of course, by Dan Abnett and Philippe Briones. I think that's how you say the name. This is Aquaman is injured, and they're bringing in the rest of the Justice League. They got Superman, Flash, Wonder Woman. I don't want to get too into it.
It's getting real.
Reminds me of the joke where Aquaman walked by the blind guy.
Do you smell fish?
No, that wasn't it at all. He said, "Good evening, ladies."
So it's what I said.
No, it's not.
I thought that's the same thing.
Listen.
Big problems with Aquaman right now.
Aquaman number 11. Available at your local comic book
I feel like
shop.
There's lots of problems in here right now.
Listen. Let's move on to something better. Cave Carson has a cybernetic eye.
Anything's better.
Cave Carson has a cybernetic eye by Gerard Way and John Rivera. This is a really cool book. I love this book. I love Michael Avon Oeming, also his artwork.
Avon Oeming.
The first couple.
Avon.
Uh-huh. The first couple.
Avon
of
Calling.
Pages.
Avon Calling.
Are you guys done yet?
No.
No.
Nowhere near.
No, not at all.
But hey, keep talking the book.
I'm waiting for you guys to finish.
Wait, hold on. Is that Osama bin Laden on the front?
You know, you couldn't be more dumb sometimes. I don't know how to... That is not even close to Osama.
I'll challenge that, by the way.
Okay.
Well.
That is Cave Carson.
Oh.
That's close, though.
Not even remotely.
But you see, they both dwelled in caves for a while.
The problem is that there's the cover has sort of a manipulation of the actual headdress.
Right.
It looks like he has
a headdress on.
A headdress on.
But it's not really.
It doesn't. He's just, it's
what you're saying is I'm not that wrong. I'm just kind of wrong.
You're not that right either.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, Cave Carson, the first couple of issues.
Hey, Chris.
Oh, boy. You know what?
So, Cave Carson really never went anywhere at the beginning with the DC universe. The old Cave Carson. Like, Cave Carson was a thing in the late 50s, early 60s, but it never went anywhere. But obviously, hold on.
You know where this conversation's going?
It's not going anywhere.
This is where that...
No, but I'm saying.
Cave
Carson's
saying. Going the same place where this conversation's going.
Is that bad?
Yeah.
Okay, but I'm just saying.
Trash
that,
bin?
That they, at the DC place there, wherever they are.
The DC place.
Yeah. they are. Those DC people.
You know, Shecky was telling me earlier today about how him and a buddy were waxing nostalgic over some old photos.
Waxing nostalgic.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm saying what I'm thinking was happened here is DC was moving. You know how they were moving from New York to California?
Sure.
And they're moving all their files and stuff like that. And some schlemp tripped over something, and the file spilt out, and they go, hey, what the hell's this Cave Carson thing from 1959? Mm-hmm. And they go, I don't know. Let's ask Mikey.
Right.
And so Mikey goes, oh, yeah, he used to be a thing. Let's make a new comic by him. Do you think that's what happened?
I don't know.
What I think happened was I'm just happy that you remembered something I told you earlier in the day.
Yeah, well, no, it was touching.
People don't usually listen to me.
So. You're right. Yeah. But, you know, I think that's what happened to Cave Carson because I don't know if this character has, the producer at, not the producer, what's the guy that's in charge of something that, like a newspaper?
Director?
No.
Designer? Editor?
Editor-in-chief.
Publisher. Editor-in-chief. Yeah. The editor-in-chief of Comic Book Daily. He has lambasted us more than a few times on the fact that we don't know much.
Well, I was going to tell you all about it, but I got severely interrupted.
Sidetracked?
Many times.
If we were ever hired by that individual, we'd be fired the next day.
If we made the next day, it would be
made
a miracle.
The next day, yeah.
But I guess
I actually made a point of reading that one. But
did you?
Yeah, but no, you know, it doesn't matter because you went on and
I'm sorry.
Talk about
I've hijacked and derailed the Cave Carson.
Of all the properties to spend the most time ever in Comic Book Daily,
it's a good comic.
Comic culture history speaking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's this one.
It's
Cave Carson.
Yeah.
Hey, give Cave Carson a try if you're at your local comic book shop today. It's at number 2. It's for mature readers, and it's at your local comic book shop.
Anything else you want to talk about? Here, why don't you just do the rest of them here?
No, Chris, you know, you're doing such a fine job. I want you to keep going.
All right.
Go ahead.
Okay, here we go.
It's a glossy cover you got there, Chris.
Glossy cover now. I just spilled Coke all over it.
Yeah, some soda pop.
Okay, so we got Amazing Spider-Man, number 21,
mm-hmm.
and Live Another Day by Dan Slott and Christos Gage. Now, Christos Gage is a great writer. I did like his stuff that he worked on when he was doing Deadshot as well. This is sort of reintroducing and talking about Carrion, also known as, what's his name?
Vulture?
Kane Parker.
Oh.
So part of the Carrion saga. Anyways, great stuff. It's all about the new clone conspiracy tie-ins and everything that's going on there.
That is a wet book. My goodness.
Kind of spilled a couple things
coming
on
in wet.
Yeah, coming in hot.
Wow. Hey, Amazing Spider-Man number 21. Pick up a dry copy at your local comic book shop. tomorrow.
But you know what? I feel like, you know what they need to have, honestly, in comics?
What?
Is covers where you need to intentionally get them wet, and then it ripples
stuff
enough.
Stuff happens.
Enough, and it changes what the image
is. That's right, that's
is.
What I'm saying.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's reactive to water.
I like
where
it.
Where it shrivels, like other things that us guys
reactive
know all about.
To water.
Right.
But instead
water.
It makes it
like
better.
Band-Aids.
It makes
Band-Aids.
It better instead of embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I think Shecky's been in a few compromising situations over his lifetime.
So. Then they're right. Back again.
Next one I want to talk about here is from IDW, and this is The Comic Book History of Comics. Now, these are the same guys that do Action Philosophers.
I love Action Philosophers.
Fred Van Lent and Ryan DeLevy.
Yeah.
So
love those guys.
To me, one of the interesting parts about this entire book is, so of course they're going to talk about the entire history of comics, and they're talking about the beginnings and all the different characters. Well, the first two pages is basically the write-up of who owns what and who owns the copyrights to each of them. Like, there's got to be
like flowcharts and
40
stuff?
Different things. Like Spawn is copyright of, and,
right.
And Godzilla is copyright of, and Gatchaman is copyright
of. That's kind of informational to a lot of just comic readers. Yeah. They want to actually know who actually owns properties and characters.
It's a very interesting read, though.
I think they want to know, Shecky, who's in public domain.
Yeah,
they don't necessarily want to know who owns anything.
That is true.
Because once somebody owns something, you're done.
Yeah,
dead
you're
to
done.
Me.
You're finished. You're right. You're
if it's
nobody.
Like a, if it's like a, hey, Dracula, or hey, Sherlock Holmes.
James Bond.
James Bond. Then you're in business, right?
It was anyway, it's very interesting. The first issue talks about the beginnings of Famous Funnies and...
Carnival of Comics, into, Funnies on Parade.
It goes into like Disney and that kind of thing. The next issue will be all about superheroes, though.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah. Oh, 1898 to 1938. That's all the pre-hero stuff.
That's right before heroes.
Yeah.
1938, of course, Action 1.
Action 1.
June 1938. Hey, comic book history of comics at your local comic book shop.
All right. Next up, we've got
Thanos.
Number one.
Thanos.
This
got a brother named Stasis.
Sure. You know what? You know what I don't like about Thanos? I mean, you know, I shouldn't say that. I like this book. It's by our good friend Jeff Lemire and Mike Diodato. The problem that I do have with Thanos in general is that Thanos is really being pushed on us now because of the Avengers movies and all that. And it's not like it's a fine book. It's a good
you know what
read.
Thanos is?
What's Thanos?
Thanos is what Galactus used to be.
Right. Yeah, but now Marvel can't use Galactus.
Yeah, so they're pushing Thanos on us, right?
Yeah.
All right, hey, Thanos, number one. You can pick up Thanos at your local comic book shop or any Greek Gyros place, apparently.
Yeah. All right, next up we've got from our good friends at Chapter House.
Chapter House, yes, wonderful.
True Patriot Presents.
Oh, wonderful.
So this looks like it's, well, I shouldn't say it looks like. This is like an anthology kind of book. The first story is by Jay Stevens, and it's about Arrowhead.
Arrowhead.
And then it goes on into A Lesson in Thunderland by Jay Torres and Jay Bone.
Uh-huh.
So a few different storylines here. It's an interesting book. It's, of course, it's got some Canadian content. So it's got the Gull Girl and...
The Gull Girl.
The Grey Owl teams up with Tundra.
I love this. Yeah. This is very Canadiana.
Chapter House does champion the Canadian-written... Canadian-owned properties.
That's what Chapter House is all about, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wonderful. So this is True Patriot, number one. Oh, True Patriot Presents, number one.
True Patriot. Yeah. So it's kind of like that Dark Horse Presents, where they'd have like an anthology kind of
book. But more Canadian.
That's right.
Exceptionally Canadian.
All right, so check that out at your local comic book shop.
All right, and finally, we have another one by Chapter House. This is Die Kitty Die by Fernando Ruiz and Dan Parent. And this is sort of, I don't know, like a different... Dan Parent does a lot of Archie comics.
That's right.
Right.
It's kind of like a new Archie kind of style book, but a little bit more adult.
Uh-huh.
But not adult and like, you know, X-rated or violent.
Right,
or anything
right.
Like.
Oh, just, well, then I don't want it.
Yeah, just mature themes.
Like, you know, it has sort of like...
Right.
More like Scott Pilgrim-y.
Right.
And the basic understanding from what, you know, I've been told or I've learned, Chris, is that Kitty is an individual. She's a girl. And it's all about trying to kill Kitty. Is that what this is about?
You'd think that.
Is that what's happening?
You'd think that. Kind of. Kitty does have to kind of, you know, avoid ghosts and things like that.
Mm.
But one of the things that I really like about this book is that they do like a fake flashback. So they pretend that this book's been going on for years.
Right.
So, for example, it says like, where is it here? This is taken from the pages of She's Kitty number 79 from 1969. So
right.
It's fake, obviously.
Right on.
But I like their fake titles. Mm-hmm. You know, this one's all about Kitty and Dippy in acid trip. So it's all about Kitty's derriere.
I
like
hear
those sort of trips, Chris.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Listen, Die Kitty Die number 2. Available at your local comic book shop. Check that out. And, Chris, I think that's it for this week. So please,
I hope so.
Please head into your local comic book shop and peruse the new this week.
Yeah. Hey, you know the thing is about those trips, Chris?
What's that?
They usually cost you by the hour.
That's so very true.
Yeah.
Very true. All right, let's have
it's like a parking meter.
Let's have a quick musical interlude, and then we'll come back and go into industry news. What do you got lined up for us there, Shaq?
Got a little Krantz for us today.
All right, let's hear it.
Great tune, Chucky. Hey, I really want to quickly interject that last week, a couple weeks ago, I was at the Forest City Comic Con and for the Joe Shuster Awards, the annual Joe Shuster Awards.
Oh,
which
how
are,
was that?
It was excellent, nice. Which was, it's like the Junos for Canadian comics, awarding the comic book industry prizes right. in the Canadian industry. And I was honored to be able to present the Harry Kramer Retailer
oh,
Award.
Oh, that's for the best, or, well, the best
comic book shop. And, you know, this show champions the local comic
Absolutely.
Book shop.
So who
and,
won?
Another Dimension in Calgary.
Nice. Now, they've been up for the award a couple times.
Yes, more than a couple.
Yes.
And they deserved every year, but they finally got their due.
Good.
And so congratulations to Another Dimension in nice. Calgary. John and the fellows and the girls over there do a fantastic job of building community and just championing comic books in general. So congratulations
awesome.
To Another Dimension in Calgary.
Awesome. I love it. All right. Listen, let's... Shecky, do we have a sponsor for Industry News?
You know we do. Industry News brought to us by Dr. Strange, who promises that a percentage of all box office income will go to teaching others the ways of the mystical arts.
All right. Well, speaking of Dr. Strange, Dr. Strange is doing amazingly well at the box office these days. It's bringing in, it's as of last weekend, to bring in its domestic total to $153 million.
That's what, 2 weeks in?
2 weeks in.
Yeah.
2 weeks in.
A couple of bucks in your pocket.
And that's,
you know?
Now, that's sure. only the domestic total, so, mm-hmm. I mean, who knows what it's going to be for like, the world.
Well, they're
market.
Saying it's earned 340 roughly worldwide for a total of almost 500 million worldwide
two
to
weeks.
Date.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So that's fantastic.
Yeah.
But, you know what, let's all call a spade a spade. It's not blockbuster season like in the summer. The
no.
competition is kind of thin.
Yeah.
You're right.
You know,
yeah,
it's
you're
a
right.
good, it's
yep.
a good time to release
yep.
this movie.
Yep. Yeah.
Nice.
But So we did a quick little discussion about this before the show started, and Chris has seen the movie.
I did see the movie.
And
I heard twice, Chris.
Yeah, we haven't yet.
Yes.
And okay. Was it good?
It was great. It was
right.
really great, you know.
No spoiler alerts.
No spoilers. It was a great movie. It was better than I thought it would be.
Uh-huh.
Benedict Cumberbatch does a great job in portraying the character. As a matter of fact, I even forgot that he was British.
Right.
Like, he does a great job of playing the American socialite kind of thing. And the special effects are amazing. If you're going to go see a movie in the theater, this is really one you should see
in the theater.
And
right.
I heard that it was very 3D worthy. Like you
yeah.
need to. It's like Inception, but
yeah.
with Marvel Universe. It's, you need to see it in 3D on the big screen.
Yeah, you know what?
Yeah.
People keep on comparing it to Inception. It blows Inception out of the water.
Yeah,
like,
right.
It's
wow.
like it's not even close to Inception.
Right. In terms of the effects.
In terms
well,
of
it's
effects,
got a
yeah.
decade on Inception,
that's right?
right? You know what I mean? So.
I think I need to get there tonight, Chris.
I think you should. Try to go see it tonight. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So visually stunning.
Visually stunning. Yeah. Acting is great.
So a newbie
yep.
Coming in that is not a Marvel Universe guy or girl. Are they going to be entertained by? Are they going to get it?
Okay,
are they going to
so,
get
so
it?
Here's what happened.
Okay.
What happened. My wife. And I went to
God
go
bless
see
her.
It. God bless her for going to see these movies.
Right.
Mm-hmm. you know, for, well, for marrying me. But anyways, yeah. So she went to go see this with me, and she loved it.
Right.
So then, of course, she talked to her family, and her family said, well, maybe we should go see it. And they now they don't know anything about comic books.
There goes the neighborhood.
They don't know anything about anything.
There goes the neighborhood.
About comics.
Yeah. A bunch of...
About I said about comics.
They don't listen to this show, do they?
No, thankfully.
A bunch of Dutchmen go to a movie.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh. Yeah.
Pretty well, eh?
So... We went to go see it. They went to go see it. They loved it.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, even though they don't know anything about the character, you know, they had never even heard of. In fact, a couple people thought the Doctor Strange was a villain. Like they didn't understand it at all.
Right.
But no, they loved it. They thought it was great.
Mm. That's fantastic. Yeah. So that passes a bunch of tests.
Yes.
That passes the test of you, a seasoned rock hard comic veteran.
Rock hard.
Right. And. And then your wife and her family, newbies,
yeah.
Virgin territory
well,
for them.
Not as so, rock hard.
Right.
So, yeah. You know what's funny? So I did talk to a good friend of mine, Mr. McGinley, I'll call
McGinley.
Him. McGinley.
Oh. Right.
Mr. McGinley.
Another rock hard
another
character,
rock-hard
by the way.
Character.
Or Brian M.
Brian M.
Yeah.
He is a staunch supporter of Doctor Strange. He's read a lot of the early Ditko comics.
Right.
And he was very... pleased. He knows more about the character than I do.
Uh-huh.
He was very pleased at how well the character was portrayed. It was very true to the comic.
Right.
Well done. You know, his cape cloak thing and
everything
you
know, was
everything
spot on.
Chris, I have trouble believing anyone knows anything about anyone more than you do.
I know it's hard to believe.
Yeah.
But it does happen.
Oh.
Often. Ask my wife.
Mm.
Yeah.
Ask my wife. All please.
Right.
Okay, fantastic. So this is good. This is good for many things, I guess. Namely for the continuation, perpetuation of comic book culture.
Absolutely, yeah.
It moves forward. I think it's good for, we discussed this before, it's good for Marvel in the sense that it opens up a new branch. It sets up a new beachhead for a franchise to build on.
Yep.
Right. So everybody was kind of staking their claim to this thing, saying if this thing works, then a whole other quadrant of the Marvel U can be exploited because of that macabre, mystical, you know, that whole genre.
The whole cosmic kind of thing. I should say. Magical.
Mystic, magical sphere of Marvel now can come to light.
Well, so I remember doing some reading on the movie, and they were saying that initially they wanted to save... I don't want to give out spoilers,
mm-hmm.
but they wanted to save the villain for... Not going to say anything.
Okay.
No spoilers. They wanted to save the main villain for another movie, and turns out that they decided to go ahead with that main villain. The villain they were going to use...
Well, I read it was Dormandu.
Well, I don't want to say anything, but the villain they were going to use was going to be Nightmare.
Nightmare.
But they realized it was too weird.
Right.
Because Nightmare is from a completely different dimension.
Dimension,
and all these different
things.
And,
right.
And so they're like, you know what? It's too strange. Mm-hmm. Okay, see what I did there? Even for the Doctor.
Mm. Listen, I have one question to ask you. Okay.
Yeah.
Did you see the Wand of Watoom?
As a matter of fact, I did.
Nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is that before or after the movie?
I can't tell you.
Uh-huh.
So anyways, okay. Great movie. Great
Excellent.
Movie.
Right. I'm very happy to hear that. All right. Chris, let's move on to talk about Why the Last Man.
Why the Last Man.
Why the Last Man. I've asked that many times. This was a Brian K. Vaughan series of comics that happened in the 2000s.
Right.
And it became, you know, like a staple graphic novel source. It was just really, really good comic storytelling. At our shop over those years, when we recommended graphic novels to people that weren't necessarily into superheroes,
right?
You know, Fables always came up, Why the Last Man.
Yeah,
Why the Last Man. And now... FX, the TV station, I guess, is greenlighting a write-up or a trailer or what do you call
pilot.
It? Pilot for Why the Last Man. And I'm thinking, okay, Why the Last Man, for people that don't know, is basically about all the males in the world, of all species, of all animals, they die off.
That's right.
except one guy.
One guy named Yorick.
Yeah, and his monkey named Ampersand.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. And they're the only two males left.
Yeah.
And it's basically the disintegration of civilization and all that kind of deconstruction, all that kind of stuff like that. And
well, if you think about it, like, what would happen if half the population died?
Right. So, and then, of course, not only if half the population dies, but if thus, basically, the future dies because, you know, 100 years from now, there's nobody, right? So, I guess what I'm trying to think, okay, would this work? Like, would this work? And how would it work, right? Because then I thought, okay, would it be like a Walking Dead? Would it be like a series of traveling events?
Well, that's kind of how the book, the graphic novel was.
Yeah,
like I've read the graphic novels.
Me too.
And it's kind of like you know, him walking around, kind of like Walking Dead.
Yeah,
from place to place,
to eventually
try to find a cure. Right.
Yeah. So, did you think these guys say, "Hey, Walking Dead worked with that premise. Why wouldn't this?"
I think that's exactly what happened. Yeah.
Right.
For sure. And I think you know, Brian K. Vaughan, he also did a lot of some writing for. I think TV shows like Lost as well, you know, and then you got this guy named Brian Fuller, who's a screenwriter on Logan and Alien Covenant. And so there's a whole bunch of other things. There's a lot of people who are working with this series they're not just schmo writers.
Schmo.
Right?
Right.
They're actually good writers, and they've been around for a little while. So I think this could be a story that could actually take off.
Yeah, like, I think the premise is fantastic.
Absolutely, yes.
And I think the vehicle to tell the story in terms of, you know, a procession of events has proven through Walking Dead to be successful.
That's right, yeah.
And so I think this is obviously I think it's just like the graphic novel, it's limited in a sense. Right. Okay, how long do you want?
Well, you don't want to go on for 10 years.
Right. But maybe you do.
Maybe
10, 12 or whatever it is, but it eventually has to end. This is exciting. I actually, because this is one of my favorite graphic novels of that era.
Right, and of course, so even though the guy's name is Yorick, which starts with a Y, it's also the last surviving human with a Y chromosome.
Right.
Right, so there's sort of a little play on words there as well. But it's a very interesting storyline, and I think it could be a really interesting series if they do it right. As long as the budget's good and they get the right actors.
They'll do it right. Yeah. All right. Fantastic. Okay, let's move on to
Inhumans.
Yeah. So it's funny. We have a site. I'm gonna plug my site here, Chris.
What's your site?
It's called the iComic Exchange.
Okay.
We call it ICE.
ICE.
We sell old, expensive back issues, graded comics.
Like expensive, like
thousands of dollars. Right. It's like Comic Link or Comic Connect or Heritage Auctions, but way worse.
But it's not like an auction
house. Right. It's not like an auction house, but you basically, it's like eBay, but just for comics, right? So we had a gentleman, good friend of ours from Montreal, send us his Fantastic Four number 45.
Okay.
Which, for those that don't know, it contains the first appearance of the Inhumans.
Oh, interesting.
And this gentleman bought this a few years ago when the heat of the thought of the movie Inhumans was on the news and everybody's mind and stuff like that. And then I guess the Inhumans movie was put on the shelf.
Right.
And the books, I cracked my voice there.
The books
value suffered a bit. And
quite a bit.
Yeah. And actually on the markets, Fantastic Four number 45 in higher grades, like say 9.0 or 9.2 or 9.4, has fallen in the last year up to about 40% of its value.
Yeah.
And this book wasn't trading at hundreds of dollars, it was trading at thousands.
Right.
And so the good news is that the good news is for the guy that owns this book, I guess, but also for comic book fans in general, is that the property is kind of being brought back to life. There's talk of it going to a TV show in a very, very innovative way.
Right. Well, yeah. So the thing is, now there's going to be an Inhumans TV series, but financed in part by IMAX. So IMAX, as you know, you go to the theaters, and every major Colossus or Silver City or whatever has an IMAX now. Giant screen.
It's like the best way to watch 3D movies.
Yeah, it's super clear.
It's so crisp.
There's only one way to look at Hugh Jackman.
There really is.
And that's through IMAX.
We can quote you on that. The only way Walter Duralia looks at Hugh Jackman
is IMAX.
It's IMAX.
Through IMAX.
That's right.
Yeah. So apparently IMAX is going into the TV realm now, and they're financing part of the new Inhumans TV series. It's going to launch next fall, so fall of 2017, and it's going to have an event in the IMAX theaters.
This is the part that's exciting.
So they're going to take the first two episodes and show them in the theaters at the IMAX theaters.
This is completely off the charts.
It's exciting off the charts. I think that's what Shecky meant.
Especially when you look at what's an episode nowadays. I mean, if you're looking at like an hour long episode each, it's 42 minutes, right? So if they show two of them, it's an hour and a half.
Which is like a movie.
Well, I'm saying if they show both of them together, they might not. I don't know, right?
Well, but it says they're going to show the first two together.
So that makes sense to do both together because then it's like a movie. You're getting like a ticket, movie ticket.
That's right.
And then you still release it to TV. People are still paying or seeing the commercials that still make money for the TV. Honestly, this is the new made a double dip almost.
It's awesome. I love it. I think it's a great idea, and I think this is going to confirm the fact that they're actually going to put some money towards this. So it's going to be an interesting show. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not just another run-of-the-mill show.
For a TV show to open up in a theater means they expect much box office dollars.
You know where this all started? Not all started. Obviously, it started... obviously, it's happened many times before, obviously, through Star Trek and stuff like that, or even before that. But kind of, you know, it reminded me of... what's the one with the Duchovny and
X-Files.
How it ended with the movie,
that's right.
And it was kind of a bridge between the screen and the movie. But this is upping it so much more. It's starting it as a theatrical release, as a prelude to the series, which is just so fantastic. Shecky disagrees with me what I just said, but I don't know why.
No, you know what? Just on a technical difference. X-Files, you know, Star Trek. My favorite TV show, Entourage.
I thought it was...
You guys don't know anything. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
No one cares.
They don't end with a film. What happens is the series ends, and then 2 years later they decide, that was such a popular series. Let's make a one-time film, which will make us as much money as a series. But it costs.
I think they did that with Gilligan's Island, too. That was a great movie.
Where I met the Globetrotters.
I love that one.
So I'm just saying, it's not like a plan to like, hey, let's end on a big bang. It's more like,
afterwards,
hey, we could make a ton of loot by doing a film as a one-shot. I didn't want to deflate your tires, but...
Yeah, it's all about the Benjamins, baby.
Yeah. Anyways. In Hollywood it is,
I think it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be great. And so what I find more interesting about all this...
Wait a minute. There's stuff even more interesting than we were just talking about?
Even more. Marvel is really concentrating on the Inhumans now as opposed to the X-Men. So the Inhumans... Wow.
That makes tons of sense.
Right. Well, because the X-Men are a franchise now, as far as movies go, of Fox. So now Marvel is promoting all the Inhumans, and they're even coming up with books now where it's the death of X, and later on we're going to have Inhumans versus X-Men.
Wow. Wait a minute now. When you talk about Inhumans versus X-Men, which is a series, a comic book series that launches December 14th, I'm asking you this. So... when they're writing this, subconsciously, subliminally, are they getting you to like the Inhumans and hate the X-Men?
Probably.
I think what they're trying to do is to phase out the X-Men. Yeah. I think they want to phase.
That sucks so bad.
Give you a reason to doubt them or to feel like
I think
they're not going to make it.
That sucks so bad.
I think they're just trying to phase out the idea of the mutant.
So here's Marvel that created the X-Men that really, really carried. I'm going to come out and say it. Yep. Can I come out and say it?
Come out and say it.
Well, you're going to come out and say it.
Come out of your house. Tell us what it's all about.
Come out of the closet, Walt.
Can I say it?
Yeah.
X-Men basically gave rise to the local comic book shop. You know,
yep.
X-Men in the 80s, in the late 70s, in the early 80s, they were the comic book industry.
Right.
And X-Men, comics were faltering in the mid-70s, and X-Men came along and saved the comic book industry. I'll say, as a comic book historian, which I'm not even, but I'll just pretend I am, comics were saved a couple of times, multiple times.
Yeah.
You know, the Fantastic Four saved them with number one in the 60s. And then the X-Men saved them in the late 70s.
Right.
But at that time, too, comics were transitioning from newsstand to specialty shop.
Right, right.
And so X-Men gave rise, really, and to the success of comic book shops. And Marvel, you know, has 100% stake in the print of X-Men.
Right.
But it just bugs me in a way. The fact that there's such a great property that Fox picked up in 1998 or wherever the hell it was, and they paid them millions of dollars to produce movies on that.
Yeah.
And it just bugs me that Marvel as a publishing company is going to just rag on and crap on this property that did so much for it just because they don't have the movie rights.
That's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. I hate it.
Yeah, no, that is exactly what they're doing. I think they're trying to basically phase out the whole idea of mutants in favor of inhumans, but because that way it's all financial.
You have to understand as well, if they're doing it, if they're hurting us, it's only because they want it back to do it themselves.
It's only because they love us.
To make it great again. Yeah, they only want to hurt us to make it great again, to make us love them.
Just to love us. Yeah.
So
we need to tone things down a bit. We need a little bit of cramps or
need,
something.
We need to calm down. Simmer down now.
Before we do, though, I just want to bring up same sort of lines. How great it is that Sony and Marvel worked out a deal to get Spider-Man. Because could you imagine if they started tanking their Spider-Man titles?
Very true.
Yeah.
The biggest
you
title
see?
Marvel has.
Yeah,
through.
You see?
Like,
we'll talk about trades in a minute.
Oh,
we'll
I like that.
In a minute.
Okay. Talk about deals.
Musical interlude.
Need them, got them. Need them, got them.
We'll come back, all right? Let's have a quick musical interlude and we'll come back.
You got it.
Back in the 90s when sports cards were the rage, in Hamilton, Ontario, there was a card shop, an actual card store, and the name of it was Got 'em, Need 'em Cards.
Was it really?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. Oh, interesting. All right,
that's when I was collecting, too. I used to collect as young.
Got 'em, Need 'em.
So when I was working at the store downtown, there was also a store right next door called Card Sharks.
Card Sharks.
Ooh,
love it.
Nice.
All right, let's continue on with industry news. What do you got for us there, Shaq?
I have a sponsor for us.
Nice.
Yep. Industry news part two, brought to us by IMAX, who has decided that they can make money off of airing TV shows, so come and pay to watch some.
Hey, you know what? Why do it for free when you can pay for it?
Man, I love that motto.
Yeah.
I just love paying people for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's. Just
so it makes the world go round, guys.
So, Shecky, you mentioned a bit of a trade thing going on, and I do have.
Yeah.
I got some things I want to talk about in a minute. But before we do that, I want to talk about Deadpool's trade-off. The trade-off.
Yeah, I read that, the Chris. Very interesting. So basically, what happened was Deadpool, the movie. They wanted to use a couple of mutants in the Deadpool movie.
Right.
One of them being Colossus.
Right.
And the next one, you guys got to help me with this. Mm. Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
That's right. So,
which is a girl.
Right.
After telling you what it was named five times already.
Yeah, you coached me pretty good. Yeah.
Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
But what the movie studio for Deadpool, Fox, what they wanted to do was change Negasonic's persona power to fit their movie.
Right.
So they wanted it to give her more of a energy-based powers instead of the psychic powers she had in the comic books.
Correct.
Right? So basically the executives at Fox, you know, put the team together and go, okay, guys, we're going into Marvel and we're going to negotiate to get her from psychic to energy.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys got your arguments down, right? Let's go walk in here and let's take care of business, right? So they walked in, the negotiating team.
Right.
Right? And they sat down with Marvel's negotiating team and they started hammering out a deal.
Right.
And Marvel goes, hey, you can do that, but we need something from you.
Exactly.
What can you give us?
That's right.
And they looked him straight in the eye, Chris, and they said, hey, you know what we're going to do? We're going to give you Ego.
Ego.
The Ego?
The Living Planet.
The Living Planet. That's Thank right. you. I forgot his last name. Ego, the Living Planet, because we know that you need Ego, the Living Planet.
Right.
And we have him right now because he's in the Fantastic Four umbrella.
Because Ego appeared in in Thor 132.
But however, that's why Marvel wants him.
Right.
Because he's like, they want to use him in Thor movies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So they sat down and they swapped.
They swapped. Just like on the old playing ground.
Just like in the movies.
Just like in the movies.
They swapped.
They swapped. I don't know what movies you're talking about.
I think that's fantastic. So that begs the question, what else is there to swap?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Do you have any ideas?
No, I don't. Oh. Unfortunately, I don't have a bit, but I wish I did.
I thought you had a bit of a
No, I wish I did.
Things here. Hold on. Why were, like, it's X-Men, right?
Okay. Uh-huh.
It may be the most generous pool of different characters that could be ever developed.
Ever.
And then integrate it into one single film.
Yeah.
Right.
Ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
And they needed. We need her because she's got shaved punk like hair and whatever, and she's moody.
Yeah. Yep. I think they also like the name. What?
And I don't like psychic powers, but I need to have other powers.
Energy powers.
They couldn't use anyone else.
Well, right.
And just make her moody instead.
They probably could have, but it would have been better. And you know what?
But you understand what I'm saying, right?
Okay, but if you look at Fox, and Marvel says, well, we want Ego, the Living Planet.
Right.
Fox is probably like, go ahead.
Go ahead.
What else are we going to use the Living Planet for?
I'd rather just look through the history books and pick a character you don't need to give them anything for to do anything with.
You know,
it's kind of give and take.
Yeah.
Do you think, though, as they're walking out, they're pissed off at each other, going, "Doh, you know, we could have got more.
We asked for more.
Yeah, you know, we could have got, I don't know, Draxar.
Or there's one
Is that
guy.
Even a guy?
Yeah.
Draxar.
Yeah. Or there's one guy.
Sure.
Why didn't we go for Draxar?
Right?
Or same thing where it's like, we let him go too cheap.
Yeah, we let him go too cheap.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
The moon.
Ah, what the heck is wrong with this?
Yeah.
But that is so cool.
You know what?
So then you need, this is listen, guys.
What?
You know, if anything, comic culture, above and beyond supporting the local comic book shop.
Of course, yes.
Championing the local comic book shop on 93.3 CFMU,
McMaster Radio.
I've actually forgotten what I wanted to talk about. But no, forget about lawyers.
Yeah.
Forget about lawyers on the negotiating team. Think about this now. Because this precedent has been set.
Right.
There's going to be job applications. There's going to be want ads for job things. There's going to be, okay, we need a negotiating team
for
comic characters. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get a bunch of gweeb guys lining up with their resumes saying, hey, you need me on that crack negotiating team.
So it's essentially going to be Marvel saying, like, hey, everyone, we need people to help us get our characters back.
We need a crack negotiating team.
Geeks.
Right. Yeah. And then Fox, though,
we'll
need a crack negotiating team,
that
too.
Is true.
Right?
True.
So it's going to be a really cool
but
dynamic.
Marvel
there.
Looks like the hard done by
yeah.
the guys.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We need to fight to get our own characters back.
Right, right. You know? Yeah. And then some guy will become famous. You know, I worked a deal for Drax and...
Draxar.
I worked a deal for Draxar for She-Hulk's
the
puppy.
The Johnny Cochran of superhero
negotiations.
That's
right. That's right.
You know what? I know you know a lot about comics, and you know when you talk about Draxar.
Yeah. Can you tell, Chris?
I think you're gonna have to prove to me.
What province is he from again?
Your knowledge again. So I have a little quiz here for you on comic knowledge.
A quiz. Is this like a Stump the Chump?
Stump the Chump.
Oh, yeah. Good for you. I haven't had one of these in a while.
I know.
I believe
we didn't want to call you that.
Correct me.
I am excited about.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong, though. I aced the last one.
I don't know if you did. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to give you an easy one to start with, all right?
All right. I hate when they say that, Shecky, at the beginning. Because if you get it, you're supposed to get it. And if you don't get it, you're a schmo.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword. Yeah. So you're done for.
It has nothing to do with Draxar.
No?
Well, that's good.
No. Okay.
All right.
What about Netflix?
Easy one to start with.
Okay, go ahead.
What is the first appearance of Groot?
Groot.
Yes. Groot is in Guardians of the Galaxy.
That tree. A tree guy. First appearance of Groot. It's a tough book, Chris. Tough book. It would be in the Kirby Monster era of Tales to Astonish.
Correct.
And it's number 13.
Oh, good call. Very good call.
And there you go.
I knew Walt would know that.
There you go.
Okay, all right.
And so, it's a big money book, by the way.
As I said, it was easy first one.
All right.
That might be one of the
that wasn't
very
that easy,
few
by the way.
Kirby monster books is actually worth more than like the rest around it,
right?
Because it's a character that was just a monster, but then
that and Fing Fang Foom.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Name alone.
Made the transitions.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's move on then. So you know how?
Chris, I'm just warming up. By the way.
Well, that's good because these are getting harder.
Percolating. I'm just you know what I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm doing right now.
What's that?
I'm lubricating myself.
All right, so
put the lubricating away. Okay,
so. You know in the Batcave, there's a giant penny.
A giant penny in the Batcave. Abe Lincoln.
What is the significance of the giant penny?
The significance of the giant penny.
Yes.
How big is it?
It's giant.
It's giant?
No.
I'm going to say that that was the first penny he ever found.
You're incorrect.
First penny he ever made.
Incorrect.
He ever made.
Incorrect.
First penny he ever made.
First penny he polished.
It was...
No, let me guess.
Okay. Yeah.
It was the first penny he... Pinched. Go ahead, tell me.
No. So, as you know, Batman likes to keep memorabilia of famous cases.
Mm-hmm.
So, he has a giant playing card from the Joker. So, this is from his first case with the Penny Plunderer. Penny Plunderer.
That's what I said.
Penny Plunderer.
From World's Finest Comics, number 30, from 1947.
Wow, I love that. Hold on, let me write that down. Penny Plunderer.
Penny Plunderer. And well, you know what the guy's real name was? Joe Coin.
Oh, nice.
But spelled with a Y.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if he coined that phrase himself.
Penny Plunderer. All right. So,
just hang on.
Yeah. Okay, so... Stanley. So yeah,
Stanley who?
Stan the man Lee.
Oh, Stan Lee. Okay,
yes.
Got it.
Created a character whose real name is Erotica Jones.
Oh, Erotica Jones.
And what is her superhero name?
Erotica Jones.
Erotica
what is her
Jones.
Superhero name?
Yep.
Dazzler.
Incorrect.
Oh, Linda. Love.
Mistress by Night.
Lady.
Both incorrect.
What era?
80s? Yeah, help us out.
90s.
Oh, 90s. You know what? The problem with the 90s was it was like a blur and a fog.
Possibly
to me.
Even later than that. Possibly
Harley
Quinn.
Harley Yee. my apologies to Harley Yee. Great man, by the
great
way.
Man, great man.
Great man. Hardest working man in comics. Yeah. James Brown of comics is Harley Yee.
Stripperella. Stanley created a character called Stripperella.
I feel like before you even looked into this quiz, you already knew that.
I did not, actually. Yeah.
Okay, Stripperella. And where does she appear?
Probably Stripperella number one. It was a TV show.
Was it a TV show? Was she in a team? Was Camel Toa in that?
Possibly.
Because I think she was in a team.
I feel like someone's got to be named Tatiana, you know?
All right. What's the first comic book character to have a movie?
Oh, that is wonderful. comic book character. Comic book character. Superman.
Now, character taken from comics, made into a movie. So...
Well, okay, define movie here. Like the old serials, the old Republic serials or movies?
We'll say old Superman. Serials.
Yeah.
Incorrect.
Batman?
No.
Shazam.
Captain Marvel,
yes. Yeah, Shazam. Yeah. Yeah. It was one of those three.
I was trying to look at the animated ones from like back in the 50s that I used to watch. Nah, the 40s. I used to love.
1941.
Woo! Yeah.
Captain Marvel.
But that was the was that before the cease and desist? Do we know?
Because
remember they had to...
It must have been.
Yeah.
It must have been, yeah. So this was 1941. Now, the reason why I had to stipulate comic was there is actually was a Shadow movie.
Yeah, that's a pulp character.
It's a pulp, and it hadn't been in the comics yet.
Uh-huh.
So it'd have to have been like Spirit or something to actually been like a comic character. Yeah.
Okay. So Spirit was also a pulp. Like Spirit was also from non-comics. It was from newspapers. It was from...
But it's still comic strips.
Yeah, okay, comic strips, but, you know, Popeye was comic strips.
Right.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Okay, so finally, based on still a movie-inspired question here.
I'm doing well here, Shaq.
How am I doing?
Sit and
learn. You know, you're doing better than I thought you would.
Right, okay.
You got two. Actually, you got one. Anyways.
One and a third.
This one I know you're not going to get, but I just thought it was an interesting question.
See, again, Chucky. So he phrases that question.
You're not going to get it. You're not going to get it.
You know what I mean.
I'm giving you the out.
Don't
here.
Even bother.
Right.
I'm giving you the out.
Is that what that is? An out?
You know what that means? It means I'm probably going to get it.
Right.
No, you're not even.
I think Chucky's going to get it.
Okay. What movie and actor inspired the look of the Joker?
The look of the Joker.
The movie and actor.
The movie and actor.
Oh,
so I'm going to say right now, it's pre 1950, obviously.
Pre 1940.
Very, yeah.
It would have been Peter Lorre. And that would have been 1939. It would have been 1938, 1939. No, it would have been like. It would have been. No, hold on. Chris. No, stop. It could either be. Either be Peter Lorre in like the Petrified Forest or something stupid like that,
To
Have and Have Not.
Stop. Wait, you ready for this, Chris?
Wizard of Oz. Something Wizard of Oz.
No. You're out to lunch.
Hold on.
Go ahead. Is it Stanley Laurel?
What? No.
Charlie Chaplin?
No. So
I'm trying to think of
I'm gonna show you a picture, but his name is Conrad Veidt.
And it's
And it's from a movie called The Man Who Laughs.
Yeah, that is wonderful. I like that.
It looks like the Joker, right?
Wow, and when was that? In the 30s, obviously, right?
Yeah, so Jerry Robinson basically took that look from the 30s.
He looks like he eats children.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he really does. Like he's got that menacing smile, grin type thing, yeah. So, Man Who Laughs, Conrad Veidt. So,
but you both saw where I was coming from with the chaplain.
Actually,
Stanley
we didn't see anything where you were coming from.
The narrow
You know, as my uncle used to say, you're half right but all wrong.
You know, we used to say in the old neighborhood, you had the right idea but no talent, right? So,
all right. So let's. You know what? We're running out of time here. Let's have another quick musical interlude here, and then we'll come back. And I gotta ask you a question about some popular media type stuff. So,
ask you a question.
Ask you a question.
Blasting off on a desperate mission to save Earth from the evil plottings of the tyrannical space lord Ming the Merciless. Dr. Hans Zarkov and Dale Harden have joined me, Flash Gordon, on a fantastic journey into worlds where peril and adventure await us.
I get the sense that Flash was reading cue cards on that one.
Maybe onto something there.
Uh-huh.
All right, so listen, guys. I know we've got a lot of interesting news to talk about, but before we get into that kind of stuff,
right.
I'm going to ask you guys. You guys are learned scholars.
We are in the know. We are industry people.
I'm none of that.
Insiders.
But you know what, Shecky, you're actually involved in my next question.
Uh-oh.
So
I didn't take those photos with her, I swear.
Okay, good to know.
Right.
So I want to know about your thoughts on Kickstarter comics.
Is that a new title?
No, so...
Is that a Kung Fu title?
So...
Shang-Chi Kickstarter.
Shang-Chi Kickstarter comics.
Uh-huh.
So basically, you know, with Kickstarter, you know, you can go ahead and support a comic book
right.
that some independent is trying to publish on
okay,
their
own. So a couple of schmoes want to make a comic book.
That's right.
So and then they first of all, they suck.
Yeah.
And second of all, they got no...
How are you doing?
Second of all, they got no money.
Right.
So then they present their idea to that Kickstarter forum.
Yep.
And they go, hey, we want to make this comic about that,
money.
But we want money.
Right.
Would you support this? This is our idea.
Exactly.
This is the lame-ass stuff you get for supporting us.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah, that's right.
And so and people then support.
That's right.
And then they take the money and they go on vacation or something.
They go to Mexico.
Never thought of it that way, Walt. Speaking of which, I'm going on vacation next week.
So luckily for you,
yes.
Chris, we have a person that I think can shed some light on that whole experience.
Okay,
because...
So, but before we get into that,
yeah.
Because I know the young Shecky Feldstein
just went through all that.
Just went through all this.
Yeah.
So you know what? Look, we'll start with that. We'll start
okay.
with that. What,
yeah.
what was the process like for you?
Honestly,
so Shecky had a comic called Blood Moon that was successful.
Yeah. Which right now, it's a script like screenplay turned into a 6-issue comic series. Trying to fundraise the first one so that you can hopefully get it picked up by a publisher, right? So the whole hopes is just make the one as a pitch tool to get picked up by a publisher, and then, you know, everything else kind of flows. Honestly, for the whole Kickstarter process, the big hurdle was you have to start the project before you even do the Kickstarter.
Right.
A little bit, because you need to get art, you need to have concept stuff, you got to do a little video, you got to show pictures.
Right.
People love imagery. If you don't have imagery, you're done. You're shot
right,
in the water.
Right.
And beyond that, you have to make your perks seem very like price oriented. You can't say, hey, for $20, you'll get a copy
you'll
of the comic
yeah.
and you got to pick it up from me at my house, you know, my mom's, you know, basement sort of thing. Right. So you have to understand that this is a business. People understand that it's not just donations. They're expecting to get a product
okay,
at
so,
the end of the
so,
day.
So you and a friend, so you wrote a story and a friend drew the comic.
Yep.
And you throw up issue number one on Kickstarter and you say, hey, you know, we want to publish this. We need $5,000 or whatever it happens to be.
Yeah.
And so you get the $5,000 and you start to do it. And then hopefully you publish number two and three and four and blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm wondering is how close are we to getting a comic from Kickstarter that is going to be the next big comic? Like, when do we start? When do
well,
we start?
As soon as my comic is made in a couple weeks from now, Chris, obviously.
well, when do we start to speculate on Kickstarter?
I see what you're saying.
Comics?
I see what you're saying.
Right.
You know when? Honestly, it's when the big artists and big writers of Marvel and DC, as they are already, get completely fed up with Marvel and DC for their super low page premium and super low page, you know, like writers' salaries, and say, you know what, we can do our own thing, and we could sell it probably just as well or better through this independent market.
So, well, do you think that could happen where the next big comic could come out of a Kickstarter rather than from Image or Marvel or IDW?
Yeah, I think it could. I mean, and the trick to something is especially comic book value, like a comic book value,
but
which is really independent of the property becoming popular. So, you know, Walking Dead number one being worth money is really independent of the Walking Dead franchise being successful.
Right.
Because Walking Dead number one being worth money means nothing to the people involved in the franchise, right?
Right.
Because they're not publishing that number one to hoard half the issues one day thinking they're going to sell them.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I remember, I actually looked at the numbers being an independent, you know, in publishing.
Yeah.
Up until issue four, all of those issues published and printed under 5,500 copies per issue.
Yeah.
It wasn't until after that where they started exploding and ramping up.
Right, and that's why they're worth money in the secondary market right now, because there's such a finite demand.
And so this is the thing. So with Kickstarters, a lot of them are going to be very, very low print runs.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
So for example,
well, how much was your print run?
1,000.
1,000.
And that's being like overly like aggressive. Right.
And how much was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle first print run?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Which very low. Which would have been a candidate for a Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So for example, I decided to go ahead and sponsor. I sponsored Blood Moon, which was yours. Mm-hmm. But thank you immensely.
Chris.
I also sponsored one called Aerobicide, the Extreme Ninja Workout, and it's basically like this.
Is it a girl doing the workout?
It's a girl doing like a 20-minute workout, but she's a ninja.
Right.
So she's wearing a Power Girl costume.
No,
with the keyhole
she's
and the...
wearing like you know leggings, like you know all that kind of stuff.
Is she in a Lulu? What's that thing?
Lululemon.
Lululemon.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. But she's a ninja, so it's kind of
she's
fun.
A ninja, so anyways, it doesn't count. Yeah. Right.
But, so in other words, she's already earned her money.
Well, it's just
it's the Harvest Moon.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. But. Anyways, it's just interesting because I'm wondering if these, I mean, not that one in particular, but you never know when
I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen because what you're finding right now, too, is the Marvel. This is what you got to think about is you have to be pretty presumptuous to make the assumption that Marvel and DC control all the talent in comics.
Right.
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 And you also have to understand the dynamics of Marvel and DC is that they can't filter out every single talented person beautifully effectively thing. So what that means is that there are a lot of immensely talented creators out there that aren't working for Marvel and DC.
Exactly.
That have this concept and have this idea and that it may use Kickstarter to finance it.
Right.
So if, you know, like you know, the theory of life on other planets, percentage wise, you're going to get, I'm just going to use a number, like 150 Kickstarter comics starting up in the next 2 years, of which two or three
might hit.
Wow!
Yeah. But of which I just have to quickly interject and say, when it does hit, you're best off going to Image because they have massive distribution.
But it may not be Image right off the bat.
Right.
It may not be Image right off the bat.
But distribution cheap.
No,
Shecky,
no. It's the way of you thing. They don't even think they can. Image didn't even want to take them, or they didn't even know about Image. They just wanted to go it themselves.
Exactly.
They did Kickstarter, and then by issue 3, 4, everybody's clamoring for it, and then you have that Kickstarter project that's worth the money.
That's
guys.
We're out of time. We gotta call it,
Listen, I think I won that argument, by the way. Comic Culture is produced by Shecky Feldstein and engineered by Chris Owen. We're on 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio, Hamilton's award-winning radio station. We're podcasting at comicbookdaily.com and getthepointradio.com. Please, please go out and support your local comic book shop.
And have yourself a great day.